Hello, film fans. Father Bowman here, if that doesn't sound too weird, bringing you the first of three festive gifts. No, not gold, frankincense or myrrh, but rather three very different episodes of Soundtracking with the great and the good from the world of cinema. And oh my goodness, is this first one a goodie. I actually labelled this in our share folder where we store all our recordings for the podcast as the actual Will Ferrell and Harper Steele. Yes, the actual Will Ferrell and Harper Steele, who joined me in front of an audience at Everyman Broadgate to discuss their beautiful documentary, Will and Harper. I have to pinch myself sometimes as part of our collaboration with Everyman, who have been tremendous bedfellows in 2024. We've had the pleasure of chatting to Sofia Coppola, Emerald Fennell, Sir Ian McKellen, Andrew Scott, Demi Moore, Dev Patel, Sam Taylor-Johnson and many others in front of you after exclusive screenings of their films. We can't thank you enough for your support, for coming along to attend these events, and there will be many, many more to come. We're very excited about our plans for the Soundtrack and Everyman Film Club moving forward. But in the present, we still have Chris Bowers, fantastic composer, and Cynthia Erivo to come before Santa does his rounds. First though, the actual Will and Harper, who we'll hear from after a track from the film Going Up the Country by Candy.
I'm going up the country, baby, don't you wanna go? I'm going up the country, baby, don't you wanna go?
Your names are on your seats. You've got a little thing with your name on it. Harper, you're in the middle here, if that's okay. Will, you're here. You got a little something there with your name on it. Merry Christmas, you know. Got a little beer cooler with your name on it. We thought that might be nice.
Oh my goodness, look at this.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank
Hello,
you
everyone.
So much for being
Hi.
Here.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks
oh
for
my
coming.
Gosh. What a swanky.
I know,
theater.
We don't have cool theaters in Los Angeles. I thought we were the coolest. This is like, a great theater.
Well, just come back whenever you want now, you know. This is the place to be. Congratulations on this absolutely wonderful, wonderful film. And it's such a treat, as I was saying, to get the chance to show it on the big screen. I guess, what were you expecting the response to be from the film? And what has the response been? Harper, can I start with you, please?
Well, I'm a comedy writer, and I'm very used to bombing. No, we went to Sundance, and I think Will and I both, probably our background is very uncertain with anything we put out in the world. So I think when it did really surprisingly well at Sundance, I personally was a little shocked, and but it was beautiful. It was a little overwhelming. It was because you just don't know how these things are going to be received at all.
You spend 17 days in a car and you drive across the country and you amuse yourself for 6 hours, wondering if anyone else will think it's entertaining or insightful or funny. And, you know, 250 hours of footage. And
whoa.
And we both, that day at the beach in Santa Monica, we all said, that's a wrap, and said goodbye to each other. And Harper and I turned to each other and said, well, I hope there's a movie there. So we really didn't have any idea. So when we finally started seeing it with audiences and seeing the reaction and listening to the laughter and the silence and the contemplation, it's been incredible.
Did you just kind of give it up to Josh then in terms of, you know, directing it to kind of, it's yours now, do what you do with it?
Yeah, we weren't in the edit room at all.
No.
I think that would have been impossible for us because it's just not a process we understand. 250 hours of footage, what do you do with it?
Yeah. So. Raphael, what do you do with 250 hours of footage?
Well, you take about 7 months to you know, get it down first to, I think, our first cut.
Yeah. Which is fast, actually, right?
Oh, yeah. Bit?
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know, I think our first cut was like 5+ hours, which...
I want to see that five.
Which was actually, I mean, we were...
I do too.
We yeah. were kind of like, wow, it actually, you know, it plays, it really works. And then just, you know, kind of whittling it down once we realized just the concept was really working. Then getting it down to 3 hours, 2 hours, 20 minutes, I think is, you know, when you guys saw
it. First saw it.
Yeah. And I think you guys, your note was, don't change anything. Hmm. We're like, well, we got to get it
I wanted some cuts. All vanity. It was all like that. I looked terrible.
One of the things actually that when I had the pleasure of chatting to Josh was talking about music. Because I said to him, I was like, every road trip you make a playlist or you have the radio on sort of thing. But because you guys were filming, you couldn't. But he said, what the great thing about that was it kind of, not that you were going to have trouble talking, but because there was no music, it almost encouraged more conversation in a way. But was it slightly weird not having kind of music to kind of turn to or switch on or?
Completely weird for me. I mean, yeah, because I have music going half the time probably that I'm crossing the country. So yeah, it was strange. We started the day a few times playing music, sort of playing a few songs. But I do agree that cutting the music out sort of, it does force the conversation. And then what happens with Will and I is it's not really a conversation. It's like, well, what are we going to do? Well, I guess I'll make you laugh. And then it just goes back and forth until occasionally we ask something serious.
There were a lot of made-up songs.
Yeah. We did sing a lot.
Yeah, we sang a lot to each other. And I brought a harmonica with me and played it on occasion.
You're welcome that you've not seen any of this.
Funny you should open that present up.
Very good. Oh.
I want to open one of these beers, but I feel like they...
Yeah, please do. There's an opener in front.
Oh, there we go. That's what it was like.
I will just say quickly that harmonica scene was like one of the hardest things for us to cut because it was like it made us cry laughing. How funny. And the harmonica came out a lot throughout the trip.
Application.
And Harper would review Will's playing of the harmonica and it was very funny.
Why do we have like Will and Harper, the soundtrack, the harmonica soundtrack? It could be a kind of like bonus.
I'm telling you, you do not want to hear any of this.
Edith, you're so on the right track. Yes, we need this.
Did you have any input into the music that was put on the film? Because there's such a beautiful, you know, mix from like that Eddie Howard track to the Bon Iver track and kind of everything in between. That fantastic Elton John piece, Amarina, which is great for day one. Were you involved in that?
I sent Josh sort of my favorites. And then I think a few of them are in the film, but I think he just sort of took it from there that this is the kind of music I like. So, but Ralph can actually speak to the kind of miracle of the music, I think, because, you know, I've worked in entertainment for 27 years, and for the kinds of projects that I do or Will does, getting that music is almost impossible. That's a lot of the songs.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. And this was one, you know, I think there's 19 tracks in the movie, and these were all the ones that we had kind of placed in there originally. And I think this is the first time, and I've probably done, you know, 15 plus documentaries. And it was the only time ever that we cleared every single track in the movie, and including the Bon Iver track that you mentioned. That was one that we were told that we were told he's never cleared it. Like everyone has tried to get it. We, you know, it showed it to a couple music supervisors and first note was, okay, you can lose Bon Iver. I've tried to get it many, many times. He never gives it. And we showed him the scene and I don't think he even saw the whole movie. I think he just saw the scene and immediately said, you know, it'd be my pleasure. You guys, I'd love for you to use it.
Somewhere, baby, it's part of me. For me, it ain't waste of hollow. You fucked it, friend. It's on its head, it stuck the street. You're in the walk, you're off your feet.
It's a great example of the kind of power that music can have in a situation. You know, it's like a friend at that moment in the film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's so, so powerful. Harper, do you have, when you're talking about music that you would play when you'd, you know, you'd go on your trips, do you have music that you play around certain places? Like if you're visiting certain states or places, have you got your kind of go-tos for things? Or is it just random in the way that you would pick the music you'd listen to?
It's pretty random based on mood. I will say that when I get to the Southwest, when I get to Oklahoma, when I get to Texas, I love country music. Mm-hmm. So I pretty much have country music on all the time. But, you know, if you're, especially night, jazz, soul, whatever, you know, I mean, I just like driving to music.
I don't know if it, like, you could tell from the beginning of the movie when we're in Harper's house, but she has thousands and thousands of records. She has like one of the most extensive, expansive music collections I've ever seen.
Slightly sad that was your first karaoke experience. I couldn't believe that.
I am a music listener.
Well, not your first rodeo in the karaoke, surely.
No, in fact, there is a stirring rendition I sing that night of Tom Jones's She's a Lady.
Whoa.
That I serenade Harper with. Didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
Was in the cut for a long
time. Was in the cut for a long time. So, yeah, I had that crowd in the palm of my hand.
No. Oh. Maybe, I don't know.
How much was planned, you know, in terms of kind of the places that you'd go and the places within those places? Was there a lot of planning in it? Because, you know, it feels like so organic and natural in terms of, oh, let's just go here or something. But how much planning went into it in terms of where you'd go? And
you know, obviously the route was curated between Josh and Harper. Having driven the country so many times, she had a say in kind of what would be a great way to go. And we knew we wanted to see her sister in Iowa City.
Yeah.
And we knew one of the things we wanted to do was go to an NBA basketball game. And so that worked out to do that in Indiana. So, but then when we visited Dana in Pekin, I don't think we knew we were going to go to her bar that night to go karaoke. So we'd have kind of some set destinations, but we had the flexibility within that to change in a moment's course. And it's really interesting because that's the irony of the scene in the Texas Steakhouse, because we almost, it was kind of towards the end of the day, we were like, do we want to do, we had shot a lot that day.
Yeah.
And we were like, we could take it or leave it. And it was Harper and I were like, no, this will be fun. Let's go to this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it was a combination of definitely a planned route because we just had to logistically, but we were able to peel off and go to places.
There's those two scenes, and I remember speaking to Josh about them in quite detail. When you go into the bar on your own, Harper, and you're there's almost an expecting sort of response that you're expecting when you go in, and you're surprised by how wonderful everybody is. And then the steakhouse is just kind of this, you know, it's just, and it must have been interesting for you, Will, as well, because I think one of the things that the film throws up as well is about kind of celebrity as well, you know, in terms of how the outside world can react to celebrity and what that can almost bring out in people as well. But I imagine whilst you're in that, you're not really, or were you kind of aware of that as you were going through that experience?
Specific to the steakhouse itself? Yes. I mean, it's usually an advantage to walk in somewhere, and I'm people thankfully are usually very sweet to me and want to say hello and want to take pictures and this, that, and the other. And so, but this time that spotlight not only turned on me, but turned on her in a way that felt slightly foreboding, and the walls were kind of closing in on us. And it just felt very, very uncomfortable. And like I said, surprising to us, because it would have been a place we would have stopped at if we didn't have cameras with us. We would, as a goof, we would have like, let's go see if I can eat a big steak in an hour and a half and get it for free. Which, by the way, it's a lie. You've got to eat a baked potato, two really gross shrimps, and like a old piece of broccoli. So it's not just the steak. I'm just letting you guys know. But yeah, the tables, all this, the room kind of turned, and it felt strange. But all of a sudden, I felt, at least on some level, the moments that Harper has to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. Harper, was there anything that you weren't able to, a place that you weren't able to visit or something that you really wanted to do on the road trip?
No. I mean, again, this is not a typical trans experience in America. I'm crossing with a camera crew and I'm crossing with a B-rate celebrity.
B as in like best?
Yeah, sure. And so you're like, everything feels safer. I mean, I've been back and forth by myself. I'm not going into that bar at night, as should no woman go into that bar at night alone. I mean, that would be stupid, I think. And so, yeah, I'm a little more aware of my surroundings, and I'm a little safer than what that documentary is. But that documentary was also about us talking to each other and pushing ourselves into those places so that we could talk to those people. But yeah, everyone has to navigate that on their own terms.
Well, I think that that's one of the wonderful things that the life the film has, you know, outside of the film, is that encouraging other people to have those conversations that you both had on that journey, the understanding and the conversations that other people have, and, you know, being honest with each other as well. Because I imagine that that's kind of, how aware were you of the cameras? You know, did there become a point where you kind of forgot that you were being filmed? I don't know. Did you?
No,
we
Josh told us before we even started shooting that when he's shot documentaries, and he's done, what, 7, I think, he said that on day 2 or 3 you would forget the cameras are there, and it literally happened. Obviously you're aware that there are people walking around holding cameras, but they're just gone. They're in the background. You don't think about them after a while.
It's that wonderful thing as well of how, I guess, the supporting cast, so to speak, as well, of them not kind of almost feeling like, you know, when you're in a diner and the waitress kind of thing, she's not reacting to the camera. That's brilliant. So even you get the feeling as well that he's working so well.
They were very much hidden as much as they could be. And I think very aware of not getting in the way of anything.
Let's face it, we all have a camera on our phone now. So we all have a certain level of being sort of used to being observed. And so I think the cameras would disappear that much more quickly.
Harper, what was the most important part of this road trip for you?
Well, getting to know Will. I've known Will for 28 years now, something like that. And we've had lots of serious conversations and we've been friends that whole time. But when you transition, you're asking something of your friends. You're asking them to see you the way you want to be seen. And it goes the other way, too. What do I get to learn about my friend Will? And I think that level of friendship I have with other friends, too. But it's just, to me, that process was just beautiful. I watched it sort of play out over the 16 days. And, yeah, I just feel very fortunate. I'm pretty sure Will doesn't feel the same way, but...
I almost feel the same way.
Okay, good. No, I think that's for me sort of the biggest takeaway. Just what it means to have that kind of allyship and the kind of work that has to go into it, and Will was willing to do it.
What was your favorite Saturday Night Live sketch that you worked on together?
It's funny because we didn't. The irony is we didn't do a ton together.
Well, we did. We did a lot of.
We did a lot
cold
of Robert,
opens.
A lot of too. Cold opens.
A lot of
we
Bushes.
We did a lot of George Bush stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But Robert Goulet, I think I loved writing Robert Goulet because he's an. I played him as an idiot, and Will does really good idiot. You do. I mean, maybe the best.
Is there a Bush cold open that you can remember?
I love the one that you did with Dana where you go hunting with your father. Dana's playing Herbert Walker.
Yep.
You're just really anxious to kill an animal.
And I kept rattling the antlers.
Yeah. I like that one. But yeah, there was a lot of Bushes.
Yeah. Well, is there all this footage that isn't in the film? Are there plans for it? Because there's a huge opportunity for DVD extras. We want a sequel. Are there plans? Is there a conversation about it?
I mean, there's been conversations about it. I don't know if there's actual plans. I mean, when we were making the movie and we were on the road and we were in a car, I mean, there was a couple of cars kind of following, you know, their car, and we were listening to them you know, 6 to 7 hours a day just talking and, you know, having deep conversations, doing these insane bits, making us laugh and cry and et cetera. It was like, oh, we've got to make this into a series. Like, there's no way this can just be a movie now. This was like day like 4 or 5. So we had still had like 10 plus days to go. And we were like, God, there's already so much. How are we going to ever get it all in there? So there was a lot of talk about that. Then obviously we realized that film was going to be the best version of this.
Does anyone like doc theories? I hate them. Like, yeah, like if every new episode they recap the one before, it's just frustrating. I need my 90-minute doc. I'm an old person.
That's why we did it.
Previously on Will and Harper. You want one of those?
Yeah.
I would definitely want to see that 5.5-hour cut for sure. I mean, that's. Can we talk
plays,
about
it? It definitely plays.
Yeah. Kristen Song, which is just.
Brilliant.
Oh, it's. Yeah. When did you get it?
We actually had given up hope that she was ever going to do anything.
I did. I asked Josh over the summer. I would say, did Kristen do the song? Nope.
Yeah. Oh. So we just assumed, okay, that'll just be a funny kind of gag throughout the film, and nothing ever happened. Yeah. And then Josh called us and said, I want to screen the movie for you one last time. I made some tweaks here and there and surprised us.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, just wonderful to get to see what she did.
Harper and Will go west. Just a couple old friends and a couple brand new breasts. They're off to see America. Not sure what they'll find. Open to the open road, only to be reminded that a friend is a friend is a friend. Till the end.
I'm really looking forward to her performing that at the Oscars.
Absolutely.
We are too.
We are too. Yeah.
Anybody in the room who's an AMPAS member, you know what you need to do. Basically, to make that happen. How amazing would that be? Because from seeing the film, it's one of a few films that I've just, everybody I speak to, I was like, you have to watch this film. It's just so entertaining. It's so beautiful. It's so honest. I learned so much about it. I learned about how to have conversations with people, be more honest with people, ask the right questions. And I don't know if you have allowed yourself the luxury to acknowledge that and be grateful that the film does have this life and this wonderful gift that it's given the world from when you released it. Have you felt that?
Without a doubt. Oh my gosh.
Slightly. I do feel like the conversation I love the most is a parent will come up to me or a child will come up to me and say, I watched this with my parent or vice versa, you know, and it's the best conversation we've ever had. And to me, that's the whole point of the film. So people have said that to me. So if that's the impact, then thank you. Then it worked. And yeah, that's all you can ask.
Go on, Will. Sorry, you were going to say something.
It wasn't going to be as good as that. Okay. So
go ahead. Give it a try.
This one guy came up to me.
Oh, no.
He said he really liked it.
Okay. Terrible.
I told you it wasn't going to be as good. Okay.
You're right. I'm sorry.
I hope you just give me the luxury for 2 minutes, Will, if you don't mind, because it is December here in the UK. And I know that a lot of people like me allow themselves to start celebrating Christmas by traditionally watching Elf. It's the key to Christmas for me. I'm not sure for anyone else in the room. There we go.
All right.
So that film, well, it's, excuse my language, I'm Scottish, so I get away with it. It's so fucking brilliant. And every year I watch it, and also it's not just for Christmas, it's such a brilliant film, and it's one of those ones I will be watching for years to come, and I love watching it with my kids, and we quote it all the time as well. Do you have any idea when you were making that film that it was going to resonate and have this ability to.
Yes, I did.
Shit.
No, we were bar in New York, and you said, I spent the day walking through the Holland Tunnel, and I think this film is not going to work.
Did you?
I remember that.
No, I was very, there were moments where I'm just in my little tiny trailer, you know, waiting for someone to knock on my door, sitting in my elf costume, looking at myself in the mirror going, oh, buddy, what did you do? What'd you do here? This could be the end.
That's what you said. You said, this really, might be the end of my career.
Yeah.
No
because
way.
I didn't, I just, I'd coming off Saturday Night Live, where I, for the most part, had done pretty much PG-13 adult humor and not necessarily family stuff for the most part. And yeah, I had no gauge on where it was going to land, how it was going to, where it was going to fit. But similar to this, you know,
yeah,
when you don't have an idea, maybe that's a good sign. But as I got into the film, you know, so all I had to do was just commit to that character,
yeah,
and believe that, you know, I was this guy who had grown up in the North Pole. but no,
method acting. You're talking
literally
about.
Had no idea.
I've got my more cowbell T-shirt on, by the way.
Gosh,
yeah,
you owe me 17 quid.
Blue Oyster. Yeah, we're going to need more cowbell, everybody. Thank you so, so, so much for coming to talk to us tonight about your wonderful film. And I really hope that you give us more. I want the second road trip. Maybe you could do a European road trip.
We'd be short. Oh. It's not very big over here.
But thank you and congratulations on a really beautiful film. Just be careful on the way out, Will, because what Elf is actually showing at the
next one screen, over.
Which was booked in before you guys were, so it wasn't like we did it on purpose. It was already happening. Merry
I'm
Christmas.
Sure.
I hope you like your presents.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming.
You.
Please, huge round of applause.
Thanks for having
thank you.
Thank
thank
you.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Thank
Merry
you so
Christmas.
Much. And safe home.
In Will and Harper, that's Fade Into You by Mazzie Star, rounding off the first of our Christmas soundtrack and specials with Will Ferrell and Harper Steele. And if that's whet your appetite, why not have a listen to the director, Josh Greenbaum, who was delightful when he joined me a few weeks ago to discuss how he came to be part of the film.
Obviously, it all started back with Harper sending her letter, Will getting it, and having this idea, because, you know, when Will found out that Harper was not doing her cross-country road trips that she loved, that she used to love to do. I mean, she's probably crossed America over 100 times, and since her transition hadn't done one, Will had the idea, obviously, of why don't I accompany you on your first trip, and at the same time that, you know, we could take this time to reconnect and rediscover what this change means to our relationship, and had that idea of like, maybe this would be a good documentary. Maybe it would help others who maybe find themselves in a similar situation. And so they reached out to me through, I've known Will for 8 or so years now, and I've known Harper for several years. And yeah, they reached out through myself and my producing partner, Rafi Marmore, and said, hey, do you think this is a good idea for a documentary? And I, of course, said, absolutely. You know, and then we had a few more meetings, and then it wasn't that long. It was only, you know, a couple months later, we found ourselves on the road on our way across America.
The lovely Josh Greenbaum, director of Will and Harper, in an interview you can find wherever you get your podcasts. My huge thanks to Will and Harper for joining me at Everyman Broadgate, and to all of the team there who have helped us roll out a series of A-list events over the course of 2024. You can find all our live shows at edithbowman.com, along with every single episode of Soundtrackin', stretching all the way back to 2016. Follow us on your socials. We're at Soundtracking UK, and please do subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is Soundtracking Extra. Make sure you keep an eye out for the next of our Christmas prezzies, which will be Cynthia Erivo discussing her role in one of the films of the year, Wicked. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.